Chapter 30. As he had made everything comfortable for the artist, there was no further pretext for staying. So she said she would go now, and asked him to summon the servants in case he should need anything. She went away unhappy, and she left unhappiness behind her, for she carried away all the sunshine. The time dragged heavily for both now. He couldn't paint for thinking of her. She couldn't design or millinerize with any art for thinking of him. Never before had painting seemed so empty to him. Never before had millinerizing seemed so void of interest to her. She had gone without repeating that dinner invitation, an almost unendurable disappointment to him. On her part, well, she was suffering too, for she had found she couldn't invite him. It was not hard yesterday, but it was impossible today. A thousand innocent privileges seemed to have been filched from her unawares in the past 24 hours. Today she felt strangely hampered, restrained of her liberty. Today she couldn't propose to herself to do anything, or say anything concerning this young man without being instantly paralyzed into non-action by the fear that he might suspect. Invite him to dinner today? It made her shiver to think of it. And so her afternoon was one long fret, broken at intervals. Three times as he had to go downstairs on errands, that is, she thought as he had to go downstairs on errands. Thus, going and coming, as he had six glimpses of him, in the aggregate, without seeming to look in his direction, and she tried to endure these electric ecstasies without showing any sign. But they fluttered her up a good deal, and she felt that the naturalness she was putting on was overdone, and quite too frantically sober, and hysterically calm to deceive. The painter had his share of the rapture. He had his six glimpses, and they smote him with waves of pleasure that assaulted him, beat upon him, washed over him deliciously, and drowned out all consciousness of what he was doing with his brush. So there were six places in his canvas which had to be done over again. At last Gwendolyn got some peace of mind by sending word to the Thompsons, in the neighborhood, that she was coming there to dinner. She wouldn't be reminded, at that table, that there was an absentee who ought to be a presentee, a word which she meant to look out in the dictionary at a calmer time. About this time the old Earl dropped in for a chat with the artist, and invited him to stay to dinner. Tracy cramped down his joy and gratitude by a sudden and powerful exercise of all his forces, and he felt that now that he was going to be close to Gwendolyn, and hear her voice and watch her face during several precious hours, Earth had nothing valuable to add to his life for the present. The Earl said to himself, "This specter can eat apples, apparently. We shall find out now if that is a specialty. I think, myself, it's a specialty. Apples, without doubt, constitute the spectral limit. It was the case with our first parents. No, I am wrong, at least only partly right. The line was drawn at apples, just as in the present case, but it was from the other direction." The new clothes gave him a thrill of pleasure and pride. He said to himself, "I've got part of him down to date, anyway." Sellers said he was pleased with Tracy's work, and he went on, and engaged him to restore his old masters, and said he should also want him to paint his portrait, and his wife's, and possibly his daughter's. The tide of the artist's happiness was at flood now. The chat flowed pleasantly along while Tracy painted, and Sellers carefully unpacked a picture which he had brought with him. It was a chromo, a new one, just out. It was the smirking, self-satisfied portrait of a man who was inundating the Union with advertisements inviting everybody to buy his specialty, which was a $3 shoe, or a dress suit or something of that kind. The old gentleman rested the chromo flat upon his lap, and gazed down tenderly upon it, and became silent and meditative. Presently Tracy noticed that he was dripping tears on it. This touched the young fellow's sympathetic nature, and at the same time, gave him the painful sense of being an intruder upon a sacred privacy, an observer of emotions which a stranger ought not to witness. but his pity rose superior to other considerations, and compelled him to try to comfort the old mourner with kindly words, and a show of friendly interest. He said, "I am very sorry. Is it a friend whom, more than that, far more than that, a relative, the dearest I had on earth, although I was never permitted to see him? Yes, it is young Lord Berkeley, who perished so heroically in the awful conflagration. What is the matter?" "Oh, nothing, nothing." It was a little startling, to be so suddenly brought face to face, so to speak, with a person one has heard so much talk about. "Is it a good likeness?" "Without doubt, yes. I never saw him, but you can easily see the resemblance to his father," said Sellers, holding up the chromo and glancing from it to the chromo misrepresenting the usurping Earl and back again with an approving eye. "Well, no, I am not sure that I make out the likeness. It is plain that the usurping Earl there has a great deal of character, and a long face like a horse's, whereas his heir here is murky, moon-faced and characterless. We are all that way in the beginning, all the line," said Sellers, undisturbed. "We all start as moon-faced fools, then later we tadpole along into horse-faced marvels of intellect and character. It is by that sign, and by that fact, that I detect the resemblance here, and know this portrait to be genuine and perfect. Yes, all our family are fools at first. This young man seems to meet the hereditary requirement, certainly. Yes, yes, he was a fool, without any doubt. Examine the face, the shape of the head, the expression. It's all fool, 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 straight through." "Thanks," said Tracy, involuntarily. "Thanks? I mean for explaining it to me. Go on, please. As I was saying, fool is printed all over the face. A body can even read the details. What do they say? Well, add it up, he is a wobbler." "A which?" "Wobbler. A person that's always taking a firm stand about something or other, kind of a Gibraltar stand, he thinks, for unshakable fidelity and everlastingness, and then, inside of a little while, he begins to wobble. No more Gibraltar there. No, sir, a mighty ordinary commonplace weakling wobbling around on stilts. That's Lord Berkeley to a dot, you can see it, look at that sheep. But, why are you blushing like sunset? Dear sir, have I unwittingly offended in some way?" "Oh, no indeed, no indeed. Far from it. But it always makes me blush to hear a man revile his own blood." He said to himself, how strangely his vagrant and unguided fancies have hit upon the truth. By accident, he has described me. I am that contemptible thing. When I left England I thought I knew myself. I thought I was a very Frederick the Great for resolution and staying capacity, whereas in truth I am just a wobbler, simply a wobbler. Well, after all, it is at least creditable to have high ideals, and give birth to lofty resolutions. I will allow myself that comfort. Then he said, aloud, "Could this sheep, as you call him, breed a great and self-sacrificing idea in his head, do you think? Could he meditate such a thing, for instance, as the renunciation of the earldom, and its wealth and its glories, and voluntary retirement to the ranks of the commonalty, there to rise by his own merit or remain forever poor and obscure? Could he? Why, look at him, look at this simpering self-righteous mug. There is your answer. It's the very thing he would think of. And he would start in to do it too. And then? He'd wobble. And back down? Every time. Is that to happen with all my, I mean, would that happen to all his high resolutions? Oh, certainly, certainly. It's the Rossmore of it. Then this creature was fortunate to die. Suppose, for argument's sake, that I was a Rossmore, and it can't be done. Why? Because it's not a supposable case. To be a Rossmore at your age, you'd have to be a fool, and you're not a fool. And you'd have to be a wobbler, whereas anybody that is an expert in reading character can see at a glance that when you set your foot down once, it's there to stay, and earthquake can't wobble it. He added to himself, That's enough to say to him, but it isn't half strong enough for the facts. The more I observe him now, the more remarkable I find him. It is the strongest face I have ever examined. There is almost superhuman firmness here, immovable purpose, iron steadfastness of will. A most extraordinary young man. He presently said, aloud, "Sometime I want to ask your advice about a little matter, Mr. Tracy. You see, I've got that young lord's remains, my goodness, how you jump. Oh, it's nothing, pray go on. You've got his remains?" "Yes." "Are you sure they are his, and not somebody else's?" "Oh, perfectly sure. Samples, I mean. Not all of him."
"Samples?"
"Yes, in baskets. Sometime you will be going home, and if you wouldn't mind taking them along..."
"Who? I?"
"Yes, certainly. I don't mean now, but after a while, after..." "But look here, would you like to see them?"
"No.
Most certainly not. I don't want to see them."
"Oh, very well. I only thought..."
"Hey, where are you going, dear?"
"Out to dinner, Papa."
Tracy was aghast. The Colonel said, in a disappointed voice, "Well, I'm sorry. Sho, I didn't know she was going out, Mr. Tracy." Gwendolyn's face began to take on a sort of apprehensive, "what have I dashed done" expression. Three old people to one young one. "Well, it isn't a good team, that's a fact." Gwendolyn's face betrayed a dawning hopefulness, and she said, with a tone of reluctance which hadn't the hallmark on it, "If you prefer, I will send word to the Thompsons that I..."
"Oh, is it the Thompsons?"
"That simplifies it, sets everything right. We can fix it without spoiling your arrangements, my child. You've got your heart set on..."
"But Papa, I'd just as soon go there some other..."
"No, I won't have it. You are a good, hard-working, darling child, and your father is not the man to disappoint you when you..."
"But Papa, I..."
"Go along, I won't hear a word. We'll get along, dear." Gwendolyn was ready to cry with venation. But there was nothing to do but start, which she was about to do, when her father hit upon an idea which filled him with delight, because it so deftly covered all the difficulties of the situation, and made things smooth and satisfactory. "I've got it, my love, so that you won't be robbed of your holiday, and at the same time we'll be pretty satisfactorily fixed for a good time here. You send Belle Thompson here, perfectly beautiful creature, Tracy, perfectly beautiful. I want you to see that girl. Why, you'll just go mad. You'll go mad inside of a minute. Yes, you send her right along, Gwendolyn, and tell her why she's gone." He turned, she was already passing out at the gate. He muttered, "I wonder what's the matter. I don't know what her mouth's doing, but I think her shoulders are swearing." "Well," said Sellers blithely to Tracy, "I shall miss her. Parents always miss the children, as soon as they're out of sight. It's only a natural and wisely ordained partiality, but you'll be all right, because Miss Bell will supply the youthful element for you, and to your entire content, and we old people will do our best to. We shall have a good enough time, and you'll have a chance to get better acquainted with Admiral Hawkins. That's a rare character, Mr. Tracy, one of the rarest and most engaging characters the world has produced. You'll find him worth studying. I've studied him ever since he was a child, and have always found him developing. I really consider that one of the main things that has enabled me to master the difficult science of character-reading was the livid interest I always felt in that boy and the baffling inscrutabilities of his ways and inspirations." Tracy was not hearing a word. His spirits were gone, he was desolate. "Yes, a most wonderful character. Concealment, that's the basis of it. Always the first thing you want to do is to find the keystone a man's character is built on, then you've got it. No misleading and apparently inconsistent peculiarities can fool you then. What do you read on the senator's surface? Simplicity, a kind of rank and protuberant simplicity, whereas, in fact, that's one of the deepest minds in the world.
A perfectly honest man, an absolutely honest and honorable man, and yet without doubt the profoundest master of dissimulation the world has ever seen. Oh, it's devilish. This was wrung from the unlistening Tracy by the anguished thought of what might have been if only the dinner arrangements hadn't got mixed. No, I shouldn't call it that, said Sellers, who was now placidly walking up and down the room with his hands under his coattails and listening to himself talk. He could quite properly call it devilish in another man, but not in the senator. Your term is right, perfectly right, I grant that, but the application is wrong. It makes a great difference. Yes, he is a marvelous character. I do not suppose that any other statesman ever had such a colossal sense of humor, combined with the ability to totally conceal it. I may accept George Washington and Cromwell, and perhaps Robespierre, but I draw the line there. A person not an expert might be in Judge Hawkins' company a lifetime, and never find out he had any more sense of humor than a cemetery. A deep-drawn yard-long sigh from the distraught and dreaming artist, followed by a murmured, miserable, oh, miserable. Well, no, I shouldn't say that about it, quite. On the contrary, I... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.